Mountain Hill Radio contains graphic language and scenes some listeners may find troubling. Listener discretion is advised. Everything you are about to hear is absolutely fictional. The town of Mountain Hill is just that, a town. The people of Mountain Hill are just people, and never has there been a true case of a monster stealing a human skin. The forests do not contain fairy creatures from another world, the streets are not terrorized by monsters who only come out at night, and the water is perfectly safe to swim in. You are safe here. We promise. This is Mountain Hill Radio. Happy day and a happy hello, dear citizens of Mountain Hill. The weather today is a bit warm, 89 degrees, and there are absolutely no clouds to be seen. The sun will set tonight at 8:02 p.m., so folks, please be inside by then. It is a huge help to Sheriff Thornton and a weight off her back. Today's episode is brought to you by Farm Fresh Grocer. Go on and visit Sally and her grandson, Carrick. They've got a new selection of fresh strawberries, raspberries, and blackberries delivered just last night by our friends down in the valley. Make sure to pick some up before it's all gone. There is a beast, standing only a handful of feet away from Lyra, and as it swipes its massive claws in her direction, Lyra moves on instinct. She drops into a roll, moving to her left and springing up by the trunk of her car. There is a horrifying sound as claws meet metal, but she cannot worry about how badly this thing has damaged Magnolia. Right now, Lyra's only thoughts, surrounded by a haze of panic and adrenaline, are to get to the bat she left in the backseat of her car. She doesn't know if it was fate or just pure dumb luck that made her keep her bat in the damn car, but she doesn't care. She rushes to the other side of the car, keeping low to keep the beast from seeing her. It roars, loud and bellowing, and Lyra recalls Mrs. Bell telling her to stay inside no matter what she hears. This is probably why. Lyra pulls open the rear passenger door, grateful when the hinges don't creak, and peeks inside. The bat is close enough to reach, and she quickly pulls it out and leaves the door open, jumping up and holding up her bat the way she would back when she played softball. The beast is nowhere in sight. Lyra knows better than to believe she imagined the whole thing. She wants to believe that it was all in her head, would prefer that, in fact, but there is still that horrible feeling of jitteriness one feels after something horrifying happens. The feeling of tears burning the back of her throat as she realizes this is something she has to deal with, and not something she can just run from. And there is a horrible smell in the air, something she hadn't noticed before. A smell of something rotten, like meat which has been left accidentally in the backseat of her car, or of milk that has gone sour. Her entire body is trembling as she carefully steps towards the trunk, grateful she's still in her pajamas and those god-awful slippers as she moves on silent feet. Her eyes are everywhere, darting from where the beast had been, to the trunk, to the line of trees surrounding the edge of the parking lot of Lost Fiction. She hopes Renford and Mrs. Bell are safe at home, totally oblivious to what's happening in town. She also really hopes she can get out of this because she thinks the two of them need a talking to. Specifically, about the way they chose to warn her. Instead of, you know, telling her, "Hey, before you move here, we actually wanted to warn you that we have a sort of monster problem, it's really no big deal." They decided to go with cryptic messages and weird rules like, "Don't take down the horseshoe, don't sweep up the salt, it's tradition." Lyra decides to focus on this annoyance because it is so much better than the absolute terror she feels as she rounds the end of the car and comes up empty. Her stance slips, her elbows dropping slightly as she takes in the sight before her. Four perfect slashes across the front and rear driver's side doors, leaving gaping holes where metal should be. Glass, which she hadn't even heard being shattered, sprinkled across the asphalt of the parking lot. in giant prints left behind by the beast, circling around the front end of the car and disappearing in the tree line. Lyra takes a moment, taking an inventory of the damage and making a decision. The beast, whatever the hell it was, had clearly been aggressive, but once she disappeared from its line of sight, it simply gave up and moved on. She had been ready to fight it, though she isn't so sure who would have come out on top of that battle. She wants to believe it would be her, but she has had, absolutely no fighting experience whatsoever. She is quick on her feet, and from all her years of softball and running miles she always felt were extremely pointless, she has a high endurance and can run long distances without much difficulty. But does any of that give her the strength she would need to fight that thing? Lyra takes a deep breath, deciding she cannot just go back upstairs and go to sleep, not after encountering something like that. She makes her way back to the front of the store, determined to find the slip of paper Renford left with their house phone number written on it, and give them a call, no matter how late it is. Lyra has just made it to the front of the store when she hears a heavy crunch, and swings around just in time to see the monster, which she should come up with a name for, though she realizes now is not the most opportune time for that, charging ahead at full speed. Lyra makes a snap decision, leaping to the left towards the center of Ashton Avenue and out of range of the monster, while also leading it away from Lost Fiction. She knows, if she does survive this, she will need a place to sleep and a place to work if she is ever going to fix her car. Lyra realizes this is also not the best time to worry about her car, but, you know. When she lands miraculously on her feet, Lyra holds the bat ready to swing. The creature charged past the entrance to Lost Fiction and is now slowly turning to face her. This thing can move fast, and it's clearly strong, but... Lyra thinks, watching as the monster crouches, preparing to spring and charge her again. With a quick look around, Lyra decides to move so the beast will charge down the empty street, trying to keep it away from the local businesses. She can attempt to explain her car, at least that she can only show to Renford and Mrs. Bell, who Lyra now has absolutely no doubts whatsoever know perfectly well what kind of things lurk in the shadows of Mountain Hill. But if businesses down the main street were to get damaged, Lyra isn't sure exactly how that would be resolved. Is that normal here? Just wake up and find your storefront demolished? Lyra has so many questions. The monster slowly turns its massive body, aiming for where Lyra now stands. Its tail, which looks exactly like a lion's, swings lazily from left to right. The monster clearly believes it has its prey exactly where it wants her, but Lyra is not going to go down without a fight. She doesn't know where all of the sudden bravery is coming from, but she thinks it is best not to analyze it too closely, in case the bravery falters and leaves her full of fear, and unable to fight this thing off. The monster launches from its crouched position, springing at least 10 feet forward before its claws make impact on the street. It continues to charge, and Lyra stands ready, braced for the very real possibility that her plan isn't going to work. It is going to work, she thinks to herself. It is going to work, or you are going to die, and I much prefer to avoid that option. The monster is only about 20 feet away when Lyra starts running at it. If it's surprised by her actions, it doesn't show it. Instead, it almost seems to pick up speed, seemingly excited that its prey is coming at it rather than running from it. Lyra's muscles tense as they reach the 10-foot mark, and the monster's massive mouth seems to split into a wide grin as if to say, I've won. But then, Lyra jumps. She doesn't know why exactly the idea struck her. She just hopes whatever forces in the universe might be watching over her want her to succeed. The monster's head lifts, its large red eyes watching first in confusion, then anger as Lyra twists in the air, swinging the bat down as hard as she can, and hitting it squarely in its large, bear-shaped head. Lyra lands on the other side of the beast, losing her footing and falling to the ground. She slides a little bit, the momentum of her jump and attack making her roll further. She knows she will probably have road rash tomorrow, and she knows she will have more than a few cuts or bruises. But she survived. Lyra turns, looking at the beast. It lies there, crumpled, and she immediately feels sorry for killing such a strange creature. She knows if she hadn't killed it, it would have killed her, but still. Guilt turns her stomach. Well then, a familiar feminine voice says from behind Lyra. She spins, turning to face the newcomer, and can't help the frown when she sees it's Mrs. Bell. To her right stands Renford, who is looking at the beast with a bit of wonder. To her left stands a stranger with tan skin and curly hair tied up in a bun. The stranger wears a sheriff uniform, and without needing to read the tag on her shirt, Lyra knows this must be Sheriff Thornton. So, Lyra says, leaning on her bat for support. Who is going to tell me what the hell just happened? Renford grimaces, but Sheriff Thornton and Mrs. Bell appear unfazed. It's Mrs. Bell who speaks, her accented voice saying, "Not here, Lyra. Let's head inside and sit down." Lyra debates arguing, but knows there's no reason for it. Clearly, they will have to explain some things, and she knows she might collapse if she doesn't sit down soon. Her adrenaline is quickly fading, leaving her sore and uncomfortable as her injuries begin throbbing. "What was that thing?" Lyra asks, gesturing to the monster behind her. "What thing?" Mrs. Bell asks, looking pointedly at the space behind Lyra. Lyra turns and the monster is just gone. Not even a hint of the blood Lyra had seen pulling around the monster's head is still there. Every trace of it has just completely vanished. "What?" Lyra begins, spinning to face the trio. "I'll explain that too," Mrs. Bell says. She gestures to Lyra. "Ranford, dare and help her inside. I think she's a little more hurt than she's letting on." Lyra frowns as Ranford approaches. "I can handle myself."
"I know that," Ranford says.
He offers her his arm.
"There's no reason you can't accept a little help."
Lyra accepts his arm, knowing he means well, and is instantly glad for the help when she takes a step and nearly falls to the ground. Her ankle must have twisted in her landing, and a sharp pain shoots up her leg as she sets her foot on the ground. "That's what I thought," Mrs. Bell says, and Lyra resists the urge to roll her eyes. She is guided into Lost Fiction by Ranford, and Mrs. Bell and Sheriff Thornton follow, shutting and locking the door behind them. Ranford guides Lyra to the stool beside the counter and immediately disappears into the room beyond, which Lyra catches a quick glimpse of. It's not a closet at all, but a small break room, it seems. There's a fridge and microwave, as well as a sink and a handful of cupboards. Ranford makes himself busy, collecting a first aid kit, while Sheriff Thornton stations herself by the front door, her arms crossed over her chest, frowning slightly as she watches through the glass. Mrs. Bell stands beside Lyra and looks her over before saying, "The beast you just fought was called a Griffba. I've only seen two of those in my lifetime." Lyra rubs her palm against her forehead and realizes with some annoyance that her hands are shaking. "A Griffba?" Mrs. Bell nods. "They're fast and strong, but don't have a lot of, let's say, dexterity. What you did, tricking it into running at you, was absolutely brilliant. They don't have the ability to just stop in their tracks, and they are big and a bit dumb. So, they're obviously easy to trick." "And where did this thing come from?" Lyra asks. Ranford reappears with a first aid kit and a couple ice packs. He hands them to Mrs. Bell, who asks if she can attend to Lyra's wounds. Lyra accepts her offer. Mrs. Bell gets to work and explains, "We don't know where the creatures come from. What we do know is some of them are intelligent, like you and I, and some of them are more animal-like. Some of them have the ability to wield magic, and some must rely on brute strength to get by." "Did you guys know this would happen tonight?" Lyra asks, hoping it's a no, but fearing it'll be a yes. "We knew there was a Griffba in the area, and we hope to keep you inside tonight, but there was a feeling in these old bones of mine that you would end up in the thick of it. We didn't want to scare you, so that's why we gave you such horrifically cryptic messages. But the other thing is, it's nearly impossible to explain the creatures to anyone whose family has not fought them for generations. You see, there's some sort of magic preventing us from telling anyone what is going on in town. Up until tonight, the three of us are the only living souls in Mountain Hill who knew about these creatures. We warned you as best we could, but there's really no stopping fate." Lyra tries to hold in her snort and fails. Fate? Really? But then Lyra thinks back on all the things that led her here and how it all seemed as if it were meant to be, somehow. She'd had that feeling the moment Ranford told her the apartment was available, and it hadn't gone away since. Mrs. Bell does not appear surprised by her reaction and continues on. "There are creatures we have taken to calling imps, who like to cause a little mischief and mayhem every once in a while. They're harmless, for the most part, so we don't focus our energy on hunting them down. To be quite frank, there are also just too many of them. Best as we can tell, the damn things breed like rabbits." She shrugs, finishing wrapping Lyra's arm in a gauzy bandage. She takes a step back and Ranford joins her at her side, wrapping an arm around her waist. "I believe one of the imps also sensed this shifting in fate and decided to get involved. They do that too from time to time, as if they are guided by fate themselves. Whatever the case, I believe an imp is the one who stole your book and set it out in your car." Lyra knows if she were hearing this tale before seeing Griffba with her own eyes, she would have called absolute BS on everything Mrs. Bell is saying. But the thing is, it all makes sense in some way. "So," she says, doing her best to keep her incredulity out of her voice, "I was meant to come to Mountain Hill, but why?"
Mrs. Bell looks at Renford, and he nods. He says, I've been Mountain Hill's protector since I turned 18, Lyra. Mrs. Bell's been a lorekeeper, and Tilly over there has done her best since taking up the mantle of sheriff to keep the citizens in the dark. Her father was a protector like me, but unfortunately, he trails off, shaking his head. Fortunately, a big mean creature got the best of him, and now Tilly's taken his place. Sheriff Thornton chimes in then, and Lyra realizes she has moved closer to their little group. I've done my best to stay out of all this. I don't want any part in hunting down or fighting these things, but I can't ignore my duty to protect this town. I've put a curfew in place to keep the citizens indoors when the sun goes down, and I've done my best to make sure everyone follows town traditions. There's no way to force anyone into doing any of that, which is why we still need a protector. Mrs. Bell nods gravely. My poor Renford is getting too old to keep putting his life on the line. We put out the ad, hoping somehow fate would intervene, and it seems it finally did. Fate brought you to us, Lyra. Lyra takes a deep breath, taking all this in. What makes you think I'm the one you're looking for? Mrs. Bell smiles. Honey, I've only ever seen one other Griffbo before, and it took my daddy and two of my brothers to fight it off. You single-handedly stopped that thing without wavering for even 1 second, with a damn softball bat, no less. What I'm telling you, dear, is you have a purpose here. You were called to Mountain Hill, and Mountain Hill needs you to be her protector. Lyra looks from Mrs. Bell to Renford to Sheriff Thornton. I still have a lot of questions, and this is a lot. Mrs. Bell nods. We know, and we're prepared to answer any questions you have. Lyra asks the most pressing, at least to her exhausted mind. Where did the Griffba's body go? Oh, yes. Whenever these creatures are killed, whatever world they came from takes them back. We aren't sure exactly how it's done, but the moment the creatures die, their bodies just begin flaking into dust. And they just vanish. Lyra holds back her shudder at the image in her mind. And you really have no idea where they come from? Renford steps in, saying, We only know what the intelligent creatures have told us, which isn't much. They aren't exactly forthcoming. But they all say the same thing, the other world. They never have elaborated or said where their entry point is, but they all say the same thing. Lyra's brows furrow. That sounds like some fantasy novel. Mrs. Bell smiles and Renford chuckles. And it does. We have journals dating as far back as the very first settlers of Mountain Hill that detail our ancestors' experience in fighting these creatures, Mrs. Bell says. I've been the lorekeeper for nearly 30 years now. Anything you want to know, tell me, and I will try to find a journal with the information you seek. For now, though, I think you need to get upstairs and get some rest. Renford will help you up, and should you need anything, we're just a phone call away. Lyra wants to ask more, wants to understand how Mrs. Bell seemed to know what was happening, and how the discovery that this town is plagued by creatures came about, and how no one else in the town seems to know what is going on. She wants to ask why, if fate really did have a hand in this, Lyra was chosen at all. Most importantly, she wants to understand how she survived her fight against the Griffba. For now, though, exhaustion weighs heavily on her bones, and Lyra knows she needs rest. Whatever adrenaline she had before is gone, and every inch of her hurts. She accepts Renford's arm, and he leads her to the stairs that lead up to her new apartment. One last thing, Mrs. Bell says, and Lyra looks at her over her shoulder. Mrs. Bell's eyes have crinkled in the corners, and she is smiling wide as she says, You did truly amazing, Lyra. I'm proud of you. Hey everyone, this is Raven, host and story writer of Mountain Hill Radio. I just wanted to take a moment and thank all of you for listening and spreading the word about the show. It truly means the world to me to have your support, and I really hope you continue to enjoy the story. I'm really excited to share this with all of you, and I hope you love it as much as I do. The next episode will be up October 18th, so keep an eye out for that and don't forget to follow me on social media. I'm at Mountain Hill Radio Podcast on Instagram and at Mountain Hill Radio Pod on TikTok. And you can search for Mountain Hill Radio on Facebook. Don't forget to share the show with your friends, and if you post about the show, use the hashtag Mountain Hill Radio so I can see it.
All music featured in the show is produced by Zach Bradshaw. You can find him by searching for Nautilus of the Tide on Instagram and all streaming platforms. Check out his music. It's all super good, and he absolutely deserves all the support. That wraps up everything I had to say. I just wanted to say thanks one more time, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the episode. It's hours later now, after Renford got Lyra up the stairs and onto her couch. She decides it'll be much easier to get up from here if she needs to, and she can see the front door, which also makes her feel a bit better. She has a glass of water and those damn pain relievers sitting on her side table, and on the couch next to her is her copy of The Shining. She knows she dropped it at some point during her fight with the Griffba, but it seems someone or something brought it upstairs for her. Knowing it's probably the latter, she feels the awful sensation that she's being watched. Whether that be by seemingly invisible imps or by fate itself, Lyra is unsure. What she does know, however, is she has a lot to sort through over the next day or so. Renford told her to stay up here and rest, that she can start in Lost Fiction the day after next. That is, if you don't just run right the hell out of town. None of us would blame you, he joked. Lyra isn't going to run, and she knows that. She doesn't want to run. Even with the fact that her life was in danger less than a handful of hours ago, Lyra is incredibly curious about this small town. She wants to know more of its history, and she wants to take a look at those journals Mrs. Bell spoke of earlier. This is an adventure she never expected, and Lyra knows she would regret it if she didn't stay and see how this all played out. Lyra doesn't believe she's brave. In fact, if you were to ask her, she would probably say she isn't, just that she wants to do right by other people. Some would argue that it's bravery to do just that, but Lyra, she truly believes in the end, she's just doing the right thing, whether it requires bravery or not. She knows, without a doubt in her mind, staying and helping Mountain Hill is the right thing to do, regardless of if it's the brave thing. As Lyra sits over the next day and a half, with Mrs. Bell doting on her the entire time, she ponders at the life she's lived up until now. Lyra has always been the pawn of someone else's games. Whether it be her parents, who pushed her into a medical program she never wanted to join, or Jennifer, who controlled her life from the day they met, Lyra's never been her own person. She decides it's far past time she became the person she has always been meant to be. She sleeps most of that first day, while Mrs. Bell bustles around the apartment, making her bed, unpacking her measly belongings, and making her food. Mrs. Bell hums the entire time, and Lyra finds herself wondering, whenever she is awake, if this is a motherly thing or just a Mrs. Bell thing. Either way, she thinks she likes it. That night, when Lyra is sure she is going to hear a creature howling, or glass breaking, or property being destroyed, there's absolutely nothing. Just an eerie silence that makes her feel more anxious than she would have felt if she had heard a creature of some kind. The second day, Lyra grows restless, and before the clock even chimes noon, she is up walking around the apartment. Her ankle, which had been consistently iced over the last 24 or so hours, now feels practically fine. Her road rash is uncomfortable, but not unmanageable, and she realizes the few bruises she did actually acquire during her fight with the Griffba have already yellowed. Her limited medical knowledge tells her this is not normal. She finds Mrs. Bell downstairs in the break room, sipping a cup of tea and reading an old but very well-loved copy of Shakespeare's Macbeth. Lyra learned in the sporadic conversations they've had over the last day and a half while she was healing that Mrs. Bell will read practically anything, but she absolutely adores Shakespeare. Renford is wandering around the store, trying to find places to squeeze the books he's been storing upstairs, and Lyra waves at him. He asks, "How you feeling?" "Better, thanks," she says, smiling. He nods and returns to the work at hand. "Lyra," Mrs. Bell says, putting down her book, "I'm glad to see you up and walking around." "I've been slowly losing my mind upstairs," Lyra admits. "I need to do something. And since I know Renford isn't going to let me start working until you clear me, I figured I can at least come down and ask about those journals." Mrs. Bell laughs softly. "You can get started in a couple days, dear. I just want to make sure you're fully rested. I remember back when I used to fight the creatures, it would take a few days to get back to normal." Lyra's brows inch up her forehead. I thought you said you're the lore keeper. Mrs. Bell nods and gestures to the seat across from her. Take a seat and I'll tell you everything. Lyra sits and Mrs. Bell begins. Mountain Hill was settled in 1822, and over the next 10 years or so, the town grew in size and the general structure of what you see today was established. But back then, there were three prominent families. The Thorntons, who became her sheriffs, the Bells, who were the more prestigious folk in town, and the Shepherds, who typically became town leaders. I am a descendant of the Shepherds. It didn't take very long for the town to discover there was something strange about the woods surrounding us. Things and people would go missing, gone completely without a trace. Strange noises could be heard after the sun went down, all through the night until the following morning sunrise. Strange tracks could be found in the woods, not attributed to any animal known at the time. Soon enough, there were sightings of strange creatures. Mostly in the woods, where hunters roamed, but some at night when the bravest of the creatures roamed the town. And not long after that came the violent attacks. The creatures continued to grow more and more aggressive, but the humans weren't necessarily innocent, either. It's hard to say, since we only have the human perspective, who started this battle first, but it's never been one-sided. As time carried on, the rest of the world seemed to forget about Mountain Hill. As if something was erasing the town from the map and the memories of anyone who knew of it. But that wasn't the only thing being erased. Memories of those who disappeared were slowly vanishing, as well as any memories of evidence found by locals. Soon enough, after nearly 50 years and a couple generations, the town was just normal. Removed, but normal. But not everyone forgot. Those three families, the Thorntons, the Bells, and the Shepherds, somehow, whatever strange phenomena was erasing memories, didn't affect them. They quickly learned they could not remind the citizens of the strangeness of the town. No matter who they told, the truth would not stick in anyone's memories for long. So the heads of each house, Sheriff Gerard Thornton, Mr. Samson Bell, and Mr. Graham Shepherd came together with a plan. In order to protect the citizens of Mountain Hill, an alliance was formed. Everyone in the bloodline of each family knew the truth. It began as a sort of rivalry at first, especially between the Bells and the Shepherds. The women of each household became the lore keepers. Their husbands and sons would return each morning and dictate the things they'd seen, how they fought the creatures, and the things they learned about the creatures. It was quickly discovered that salt was the best and most effective way to keep the creatures out, so Sheriff Thornton advised everyone in the town to keep a salt barrier around their house. It didn't take much convincing. It was a very superstitious time. Then it was discovered that iron had properties which could harm the creatures, so each member of the three families carried a weapon made of iron on their person. Even the women, who, at this point in time, began to help in tracking and even on occasion, fighting the creatures. The rest of town were told to nail an iron horseshoe on or above their front doors to ward out evil spirits. When we told you these things, the salt, the horseshoes, and the curfew are a part of our tradition, we weren't lying. These things became so normal, so essential to our culture, that now no one questions them. It was the best possible way the three families knew how to protect the town from the evil which plagued it. The journals that I have date back to the first creature sighting. Families who lost their memories over time ultimately ended up losing the journals which contained the true history of Mountain Hill. Whether that was due to the memories being washed away, or the items being stolen by what we now know as imps, there's no real way to be certain. What we do know is, the only accounts we have today come from the three core families. When I said I was a lore keeper, that is a title that is passed down through my family. My mother was the lore keeper before me, and hers before her. But we are not just keepers of lore, we are protectors of the town. Till a few years ago, I went out with Renford and Tilly's father every night and ensured the town of Mountain Hill was safe, or as safe as we could make it. But the fighting began to take its toll on me, and I had to make the decision to step back. Now, it's just Renford, and he cannot do this by himself. Not anymore. Lyra listens intently to Mrs. Bell's story, completely engrossed as she learns the history of Mountain Hill. Mrs. Bell pauses a moment and takes a sip of her tea before asking, "Do you have any questions so far?" "You said there are only three families who are somehow able to remember the creatures exist," Lyra says. "But I don't imagine you've only married within these families. How does that work?" Mrs. Bell smiles. "You'd be correct. In fact, I do believe Renford and I are the first who married inside the families. Everyone else before us married an outsider. Somehow, once an outsider married into the family, they were able to learn the truth. As if somehow by adopting the family name, whatever strangeness that prevented them from knowing the truth before was lifted. This only worked for women marrying into the family, however.
We believe somehow the truth is attached to our family names. Or at least, that's what we believed. Now that you're here, that theory is disproved. Maybe whatever the strangeness is that allows you to know the truth has decided that I should know it as well, Lyra suggests. That's what I've been thinking. Mrs. Bell finishes off her tea and gets up, taking a moment to wash her cup in the sink before getting into the fridge and pulling out something vaguely sandwich-shaped that has been wrapped in a paper towel, as well as a bottle of water. She hands them to Lyra, who accepts without argument. Even though Renford warned her on that first day, she still told Mrs. Bell it was totally unnecessary for her to make Lyra so much food. Mrs. Bell responded by handing her a bowl of soup she made from scratch. Lyra's decided Renford was right, and she will no longer be attempting to shut down the food making. You said the other night that you had a feeling I would end up getting involved in all of this. How does that work? Mrs. Bell smiles as she takes her seat. Ever since I was young, I've always had the sort of, let's call it, clairvoyance. I've always been able to sense things others can't, and see things that may come to pass. This ability is not infallible, but I do my best to heed it whenever I can. A few months ago, I had this feeling that something big was coming. The feeling hasn't gone away, and has only grown with each passing day. I knew immediately that Renford is not going to be enough to stop the force that's coming, but I knew there were people who would be strong enough to face it. We put out the ad for the apartment in as many papers as we could, as far as we thought in the realm of possibility for anyone looking to move to a town they'd never heard of and would never be able to find on a map. The day you called, I'd been having this strange jittery feeling I've always felt whenever a change is coming. I knew, long before you did, that you would be calling. I didn't know your name, but I had a vision of you, standing proud and fierce, and I told Renford that we needed to be by the phone all day in case you called. We waited all day, and when you finally did call, I told Renford you were the one. I had a feeling in here, she says, pointing to her head. And here, she points to her heart. My instincts have never led me astray, Lyra. Lyra thinks about everything that led up to her move to Mountain Hill, and she wonders how much of her life was spent just waiting for this. This purpose, this place she truly belonged. You said people a moment ago. It isn't just going to be me facing this coming force, is it? Mrs. Bell nods. Her eyes take on that same strange gray tone they did the other night when she warned Lyra to stay inside as she says, It's almost as if there are red strings of fate tethering you all to this place, connecting each of you here. All of you have trials to face, and all of you have pasts you may wish to forget, but those pasts which haunt you are what will give you the strength to face what is coming. Mountain Hill may not have been your origin, but she is the center upon which your gravity is affixed. How many of us are there, Mrs. Bell? Lyra asks softly, leaning forward in her chair. There are four whom fate calls upon. The fighter, our protector and leader. The mage, who knows not the power he wields. The drifter, who has a darkness within she cannot outrun. And the berserker, who carries burdens he has never deserved. The four of you have a destiny guided by fate itself. Mrs. Bell blinks, and the strange trance-like quality that overtook her is now gone. Oh, there I go again, prophesying. Do you know who the other three are? Lyra asks, though she knows it's a long shot. Mrs. Bell shakes her head. Unfortunately, no. I get these glimpses every now and again, but nothing so concrete as the vision of you. Lyra smiles. That's okay. You came to ask me about those journals, Mrs. Bell says, rising and holding out her hand for the now empty water bottle and paper towel, which Lyra hands over. I talked your ear off, and I know it was a lot of information. Do you still want to see them? Lyra nods. She rises, the sense that she is doing something right filling her absolutely. Mountain Hill is my home now, and I will do everything in my power to keep her safe. Lyra spends the rest of the evening in her apartment, flipping through journals that are nearly 200 years old, taking in as much information as possible. A lot of the earliest writings are about the strangeness of the area, but as time progresses, Lyra watches as the three families learn more and more about the strangeness, and how they learn to combat the creatures who terrorize the small town. Lyra learns names of different creatures, and finds drawings in each journal of the creatures who were encountered. She learns of something called a graveling, which moves at an extremely slow pace, but is nearly impossible to kill save for destroying the brain. They are extremely venomous, and according to the journals, there's no known way to cure someone of the bite, except to burn or freeze the area which has been affected.
Lyra has always been a huge fan of zombie movies, but the prospect of facing a creature that is horrifyingly similar to a zombie makes her feel a little queasy. Lyra learns the strangeness was eventually called magic, and she learns that there are creatures who know how to harness and wield that magic. There are the Cinder Fiends, which can manipulate fire and who nearly burned down a part of the forest a few decades ago. And then there are the Havoc Sprites, which have the ability to manipulate all sorts of different arcane elements. The Water Sprites, who have been known for tricking kids to follow them to the rivers and streams surrounding Mountain Hill, only for the kids to never be seen or heard from again. There are the Sprites who can manipulate the air, who have on occasion caused horrible windstorms that pulled trees from the ground. The Earth Sprites, who can shatter rocks and cause earthquakes with their magic. Lyra reads about the creatures well into the late hours of night, and when she finally manages to pull herself away from the books, she notices the sun has finally set. She debates the merits of going out and seeing if another creature would attack, but she knows if she were to do that before her injuries have fully healed, Mrs. Bell might actually murder her. She gets up and reheats some leftovers from the homemade spaghetti Mrs. Bell left her the other night, and sits back down on the couch, contemplating everything she has learned. According to the journals, the intelligent creatures who have been captured by the three families have shared little to no information about where they are from or how they got here. The most they have shared is next to nothing. They come from a place called the Other World, and they have come through a rift between their world and ours. There is nothing about where the rift can be found, which is mildly frustrating, and absolutely no data on how many creatures have come through. It seems there is no shortage on what kind of creatures find their way here, varying from small to large, from highly intelligent to animalistic. Each creature that has been seen has been documented, and either artistically rendered or described with high attention to detail. Lyra is midway through a passage about yet another Havoc Sprite when there is a loud animalistic shriek from outside. She jumps, heart racing as she listens, waiting for another sound. When one doesn't come, she wonders briefly if it was her imagination, but something tells her not to ignore the sound. But there could be any number of creatures who might be able to make that sound, any that might cause harm to Mountain Hill. Her heart has just finally settled in her chest when the shriek comes again, this time much louder and much closer. Lyra rushes to the window in the kitchen, looking down over the parking lot of Lost Fiction. She watches the line of trees, holding her breath as she waits. She doesn't have to wait long. A creature about the size of her car, which Renford had towed yesterday morning to his garage where it will sit until Lyra can afford to fix it, comes crashing through the bushes. It looks reptilian in nature, a shade of purple so dark it almost appears blue, with short upper arms and large webbed feet which have massive claws. It has a long tail with spikes on the end, which it swings back and forth as it stops in the middle of the parking lot. Its head reminds her of a rhinoceros, with two long, sharp tusks on the tip of its nose. It opens its mouth, revealing large, sharp teeth, and shrieks, and it seems to be staring directly at Lyra. She doesn't hesitate. Lyra goes into her bedroom, scooping up a pair of jeans and her favorite high-top tennis shoes. She quickly changes out of her pajamas, pulls her long hair up into a ponytail, and grabs her bag. Lyra grabs the doorknob, taking a deep breath to steady herself before pulling open the door and stepping out into the cool evening air. She races down the steps that wrap around the side of the building, taking them two at a time. Her injuries have nearly completely healed, which is a blessing. Lyra learned in all her reading that somehow the strangeness, or the magic, has made healing much faster. So long as she was in the town, or the woods surrounding, any wounds she received while fighting the creatures would heal much quicker than it would in the rest of the world. Lyra reaches the parking lot, skidding to a stop as she raises the bat, resting it across her shoulders in a casual stance. The creature spots her, hissing and spitting through its sharp teeth. Lyra smiles, lifting the bat from her shoulders and twirling it casually in a circle before gripping it in both hands, planting her feet. "Let's go, beastie," she says, and the creature charges her. This creature is one she happened to read about earlier in the evening. It is called Shadow Claw, and it uses its sharp claws, which are tipped in deadly nightshade, to scratch its victims, leaving them delirious and weakening them enough for it to drag them back to its lair. Apparently, according to an ancestor of the Bell family tree, it is known to pick each and every bone clean. The creature lunges for her, and she sidesteps it, swinging around and smashing the bat down on its tail. It shrieks, spinning and swiping at her with its claws. Lyra jumps away, just narrowly missing a swipe to the belly that surely would have been incredibly painful. "That was rude," she says, and the creature snarls as it lunges for her again. This time, she swings the bat and hits it in the stomach hard enough for it to stumble back. Its tail keeps it upright, but the shadow claw is momentarily distracted, long enough for Lyra to swing the bat once more, hitting it square in the jaw. The creature's head snaps to the side and it falls, landing on the ground with a heavy thud. Lyra watches with a mix of horror and fascination as the creature's body begins to flake away, scattering in a breeze she cannot feel. She takes a moment to catch her breath, one hand on her hip as she rests the bat on the ground, leaning on it for support. Her side aches, and she knows she has strained the minimal injuries she has left after her fight with the Griffba, but it was worth it. Lyra had already made the choice to stay, but with this fight, she feels a sense of purpose, as if finally, after hunting for a place to belong for her entire life, she's found it. A home. A duty. A life free of manipulation and total control over her own future. Lyra marvels in that feeling, and before long, the creature is flaked away, returning to whatever realm it came from. Lyra's about to head inside when, out of the corner of her eye, a form begins to take shape. If she turns to look directly at it, the form disappears. But if she looks at it in her periphery, it becomes more and more solid. Though, solid isn't exactly the right word. It has a shape, but that shape is made up entirely of a strange ethereal light that is shifting rapidly from green to blue to purple to white. There is a sound, high-pitched and terrible, that makes her cover her ears. But the sound the thing is making isn't out loud. It's in her head somehow. Lyra drops to one knee, squeezing her eyes shut as the ringing gets louder and louder until finally, there's a voice. "Lyrana Myers," the thing says, and it is in her head and all around her. "How long we have waited for you. The time has come. Your destiny awaits. Find the three who will become the protectors of Mount Nil. Together, you will discover the truth, and you will save this entire world from the darkness which is coming. It can only be you. The four guardians who will protect this land from rot and destruction. Do not fail us, Lyrana Myers. Do not fail, Mountain Hill." The ringing slowly fades, but Lyra cannot stop trembling as she drops her hands from her ears and looks up, searching out the strange being which appeared before her. But it is nowhere to be found. Lyra gathers herself up from the pavement, picking up her bat from where it landed after she dropped it. She shakes herself off, pulling herself together. Whatever that thing was, it delivered a very similar prophetic message to the one Mrs. Bell gave, and Lyra knows it is no coincidence. "There will be four of us," Lyra thinks as she climbs the stairs up to her apartment. "Four of us to save the entire world." Things are about to get real interesting around here. This has been Mountain Hill Radio. I'm just a woman, alone in a radio tower, speaking into the void and hoping that somebody hears me. I hope, whoever you are listening to this, that you are somewhere warm and safe, and that you remember you are never alone. I am always here with you, your constant companion, into the late dark hours of night. Remember, everything you've heard is absolutely fictional. There are no monsters roaming the streets, and under absolutely no circumstances is it okay to leave your house after curfew. Thank you for listening.